Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I am delighted to welcome Frank Dane to the show. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Donald. Thank you so much for having me.
Frank is here because he has a brand new album out called I've Had a Love. Congratulations on the new album. It is his second album. But it's his first album in 24 years, which we will get to. We'll get to the story behind that. Frank has a very complex career. He's a man of many, many talents, and a very major player in the New York cabaret scene, which we will also talk about. He also has some dates coming up at Don't Tell Mama in New York in May, which we are going to cover as well. But first, so the listeners know who Frank is, why don't you talk about a little bit about your background, where you grew up, how you got into music and performing, and about your family. I'm always curious as to where people, what their upbringing is like in terms of, what did you come from a musical family? Did you, where did the love of music come from in your growing up?
Well, I was born and raised in Akron, Ohio, Eastern Ohio, in an Italian Catholic family, both sides Italian. So I am second generation. Three of my four grandparents came from Italy. So I always think that there might be some of that musicality that just came from the Italian language.
Right.
Itself. You know, my mother was a piano player. And so there was music in the house all the time. We didn't have many records. We didn't have a stereo. It was just something that wasn't in our financial picture because I am the oldest of five. So it was a big, I told you, Italian Catholic.
Yeah.
it's a big family. My mother had sung in church choir and school choir, and she played piano since she was a child. So she was always playing just for her own enjoyment, but also there were a couple of people she knew who were singers, and they would come over to the house and sing, and they sang predominantly the American Songbook and songs from Broadway shows. And I had two cousins, two female cousins who were really good singers on my dad's side, who would do shows throughout Akron and sing at weddings and all those kind of events. And so there was always live music in my house more than recorded music. And my dad also had really a beautiful voice. He didn't sing that often. And my mother always says, well, why do you think I married him? It was because of his voice. if he had had the ambition, if that had even been in his thought process, I believe he could have been one of those Italian crooners from the 40s and 50s. He had that kind of smooth, easy voice. So I think that musical connection and whatever talent I may have came from my parents. Without it being a, this is what you're going to do, because from an earlier age, to keep me quiet, my mother gave me crayons and paper, and they discovered that I had somewhat of a knack for drawing. So they pushed me as an artist. So I was always drawing in grade school and high school, and I actually went to college to be an art teacher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was part of where my current graphic design background comes from.
Right.
But in high school and college, I got involved in the theater departments.
Right. And where did you go to college? I'm just curious.
I went to the University of Akron, which unfortunately no longer has a theater department. It was a small department anyway, and we were sort of overshadowed by Kent State, which was in the next county and had a very large theater department. And well, theater department. But I had switched from art education to theater and got a BA in theater arts and did shows in college, did some community theater, and then I had a friend who moved to New York, and after after I wasn't accepted to an MFA program at a university, I decided I would move to New York and try to make that happen here.
Mm-hmm. And did you move to New York to pursue theater, to pursue singing, to pursue graphic arts?
Did
you?
No, it was the idea was theater, to be a chorus boy. You learn very quickly that the dancing you can do in Akron, Ohio, isn't the dancing you can do
in New York. Yes. Yes, New York is a whole new ballgame, I'll tell you.
Yeah, right. I mean, I was fine with what I did, but, you know, even taking classes, I could see I was starting at a later age and at a disadvantage. And during a voice lesson, this was my third teacher. Her name is Marianne. She said, "What would you like to do? What would you like to do with your singing? If you could do anything, you don't even have to do it, but as your fantasy, what would you do?" And without hesitating, I said, "I would really like to get a bunch of songs together and just do a club act." I didn't know from the word cabaret, except from the movie at that point. But I had just seen Lena Horne's one-woman show on Broadway and was blown away by it. And I thought, wow, that's something that interests me. And the moment I said I would like to do a club act, she said, "That's it." She said, "Now I know how to work with you. I'm not going to change the way I've taught you, but you don't have a chorus boy voice." She said, "You don't have that sort of generic type voice, and I can't make it that because you're not built that way. So now I know how to steer you along." And within a year, I did my first then cabaret act. And fell in love with it.
That's amazing. I mean, that's amazing to do that so quickly.
Yeah, I don't do it that quickly now. But
well, because that's a pretty major shift in focus to, you know, to come to New York and that quickly shift your focus to cabaret, because cabaret is not easy.
No, it's not. But I found it to be, as much as I love performing live and doing musicals, I just found a freedom in doing cabaret because you can do whatever you want. And as much as I like being a character, you weren't confined to the restrictions that a script gives you. And if you wanted to be a character in every different song, you could do that. But again, it was just a fantasy. I never thought that would be something I would have the courage to do, you know, to get up and be with just a piano player all by yourself. That takes a lot of guts. And I didn't know that I had it until I did it. And after that first time, I thought, well, I think I found a home here because of, again, the freedom of it all and the ability to sing what you want and do what you want. And for an hour, you're able to entertain. And it was more relaxing for me than any theater I'd ever done.
Right.
Strange, too, because, again, my background wasn't as a singer. I was never in choir. I was an art major that took up all my time in high school and got involved with the drama department. And you couldn't do musicals unless you were in the choir. And so for me to end up as a singer was really a surprise to, I think, a lot of people, especially me, but to a lot of people. But again, in my DNA somewhere is the vocal ability of my parents.
Night and day, you are the one. Only you, beneath the moon and under the sun. Whether near to me or far, it's no matter, darling, where you are. I think of you night and day, day and night. Why is it so that this longing for you follows wherever I go? In the roaring traffic's boom, in the silence of my lonely room, I think of you. Night and day, night and day, under the hide of me, there's an oh such a hungry yearning burning inside of me. And its torment won't be through till you let me spend my life making love to you. Like the beat, beat, beat of the tom-tom when the jungle shadows fall. Like the tick, tick, tock of the stately clock as it stands against the wall. Like the drip, drip, drip of the raindrops when the summer shower is through. So a voice within me keeps repeating you, you, you. Night and day, under the hide of me, there's an oh such a hungry yearning burning inside of me. And its torment won't be through till you let me spend my life making love to you. Day and night, night and day, day and night. Night and day and night and day and night and night and day.
Being a cabaret performer is, in some ways, you are sort of a storyteller.
If you're doing it right.
Yes. No, and that, people don't always realize that. It's more than just standing up on stage and singing, because you are taking the audience somewhere. I mean, a good cabaret show has a point of view. It has a story it's telling. It has a journey that it's taking the audience on. Sometimes it's autobiographical. Sometimes it's not. But it has some sort of focus of the evening that you want to take the audience somewhere. And that's the whole point. So in some ways it is a story you're telling.
And I always say, and the older I get and the more cabaret I see, I would rather have a person who's not a great singer, not a great vocalist, but who tells me the story. Mm-hmm. That show I'm more interested in, and that's a person I'm more interested in spending time with than somebody with a beautiful voice who hasn't a clue about what they're singing.
I've been to some of those shows.
I'm sure you. We all have, and it's interesting because if you're really paying attention to the lyric, and I tend towards the Great American Songbook, and those lyricists were craftsmen. Uh-huh. They were telling a story. It just wasn't about let's match the words to the music, or if the words came first, the music to the words. It was about we're telling a story, whether it was a standalone song that became a popular hit or something from a movie or a show. It was the best songs in a Broadway show, you know, further the story along. There's only so much the dialogue can do, and then the song takes over because you can't express it just in words without the words and music. And that's what I look for in a good cabaret performance, too.
Right.
I want to tell me a story. That's what I say all the time.
Exactly.
Tell me a story. And I don't need to know why you're telling me the particular story. If you are invested in the story that you're telling, then I'm going to be invested in it. Uh-huh. And the other good thing about cabaret is that you can take a song, for example, there. I judge this contest because Mama's the next big act at Don't Tell Mama. It's every summer. And a number of years ago, one of the contestants took the song Kiss Him Now from Dear World by Jerry Herman. But she sang it to her son. Instead of it being a romantic relationship that this character is singing about, she was singing about the mother-son relationship. And that's the other great thing about cabaret. You can make a song tell your story, and you're confined to that box that a song from a Broadway show came from.
Right.
You don't have to play that character. So that's, as I did more shows, that's what I found more interesting. Because honestly, when I started out, I had vocal issues. I was still working on my voice. So I relied on telling the story. And that comes from my favorite singer, who is Barbara Streisand, because in those early recordings, you know, sure, she had the voice, but she was telling a story to me all the time. And that always was in the back of my mind, because at first I'm saying, well, you're not that comfortable a singer yet, so don't rely on just your voice.
Right, exactly.
Tell the audience the story.
Right.
And, when the two go together, it's great. But I wasn't at that point when my first show was 1982.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I had only been in New York for 3 years at that point. So to have gotten onto a cabaret stage 3 years after coming to New York to be a chorus boy, it was really a major, major switch for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved it. And I still love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then let's talk about your first album, because you've released your first album back in 2001. Called I Thought About You. How did the first album come about, and talk about the whole process you went through to get the first album up? Because it's not easy to put an album together, as most people will tell you. And especially your first album, because you want to get it right, because it's your first time. People are going to hear you. A lot of people are not going to know you because they've not seen you in person before. And it also is also something that you want to be able to sell when people do come to see you, and you want it to be a representation of what people are going to see when they come to see you. So putting your first album together is always a bit nerve-wracking. So talk about that first album.
Well, I had been working with Rick Jensen. Some of your listeners might know who he is. He's a New York singer-songwriter. He had worked with Nancy Lamott for years until he had to help a friend who was ill and could no longer work with her. And then she started with Christopher Marlowe, a great relationship with both of them. And I had done a couple of shows with him, and the director was Lisa Asher, who had just done her own CD. And I was fascinated by the recording process. So I said, you know, I'm not really interested in doing another cabaret show right now. I said, I'd like to do something more permanent. Because sure, you can record, you can videotape a show, you can make an audio recording, but it's still not the same thing. Uh-huh. And I was always fascinated by recording, and wasn't even sure if it was something that would work for me, you know, because some voices just don't work. You know, you need to see them live and translate to recording, and sometimes it's vice versa. So Rick and Lisa and I just started to look at music. Some selections we had chosen from the shows that Rick and I had done together, and then just some other songs that I wanted to explore that interested me. So we worked, I think we worked a couple of years on the material. Part of it was a financial thing, because it ain't cheap.
Right.
And this was 24 years ago. You can imagine what it's like now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, in some ways, it's different now, because people like home record now. I mean, it's the whole process has changed quite a bit.
Right. There is that, but I definitely wanted to get into a studio and had a number of musicians on the first album. I wanted to make sure that happened this time too, because originally I thought about you was only going to be piano and voice. Then Lisa's husband, Jeff Waxman, who's a record producer, got involved in, and he and Rick convinced me that we should add other instrumentation, which I'm happy about. I mean, I was thrilled to sing with musicians, but again, the piano vocal was going to be a less expensive outing. But we did that. So we worked on that. I definitely knew Rick's song In Passing Years was going to be the closer of the album. It's funny, for both albums, I knew what the last song was going to be before what I knew, before I knew what any of the other stuff was going, where it would land. And then we just started working on the material, and we went into the studio and we put down scratch vocals to get all the instrumentation correct. And then we took our time over a number of months to put down vocals. And that experience, and I've said this before, as much as I love recording, I'm performing live, I love being in the recording studio. There's another freedom that comes in the studio that doesn't, that's different from what happens on stage.
Right.
It's just, it's a whole experience that I didn't know I would like as much as I did. And it's something that I want to continue to do.
When I look in your eyes, I see the wisdom of the world in your eyes. I see the sadness of a thousand goodbyes. When I look in your eyes, and it is no surprise to see the softness of the moon in your eyes, the gentle sparkle of the stars in the skies. When I look in your eyes, in your eyes, I see the deepness of the sea. I see the deepness of the love I feel you feel for me. Autumn comes, summer dies, I see the passing of the years in your eyes, and when we part, there'll be no tears, no goodbyes. I'll just look into your eyes. I see the deepness of the sea. I see the deepness of the love I feel you feel for me. Autumn comes, summer dies, I see the passing of the years in your eyes, and when we part, there'll be no tears, no goodbyes. I'll just look into your eyes. Those eyes, so wise, so warm, so real. how I love the world. Your eyes reveal.
So we worked on that CD. It was finished in, mixed and mastered and produced in late spring of 2001, and we thought, well, we don't want to release something during the summer. Sort of at that time, summer was not a great time. Now, with everything being 24/7, uh-huh. there sort of isn't a schedule any longer. So, talk about timing. We released it a week before 9/11.
Right. Yeah.
And
timing is everything.
Yeah, yep. Timing is everything, and it sort of went nowhere for a while.
Right.
As was expected, everybody was focused on that tragedy and what it meant in this country and what it meant going forward. So it took a little while for it to start to get radio play and get reviews. And the other difference between then and now is I'm grateful for people like you, because there are fewer outlets, fewer radio stations that are playing this music. There are fewer reviewers who are writing about this kind of music. With everything being on social media and streaming, it seems like everybody's a critic.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Everybody has an opinion, which is
right,
good and bad. But it did well, and I did get radio play, and I did throw just a small little gathering as a release for it. But I remember we started to work on an actual show to do some of the material and add some new stuff and some old stuff that we didn't record. And I don't remember now why that didn't happen. It could be because I had had a job for 16 years, a corporate job that I had left for reasons we don't need to go into, but it just became an unpleasant situation. And I went out on my own and decided I would start to use some of my art background and start to do some graphic work. But, you know, that took a while to get going. And thank God for credit cards, because that's how the CD happened.
Right.
But I think the show probably didn't happen for financial reasons too at the time. And I needed to just build up, you know, the resources to do it again. And then it took a while for me to do another show. It was a number of years, because my husband Bill and I had decided that we wanted to do some traveling, and we didn't want to wait until we retired. And at that point, we were many years away from retiring. And so our resources went into to traveling, because
life intervenes.
Life intervenes. And I don't, especially now, have no regrets that we were able to do all of that.
Right.
And so the CD's been, that first one's been out there. And then I did another show. I started working with Kathleen Landis, who had done some design work for her. And I gave her my CD as a, you know, here, just listen to this. She played at the Café Pierre for 21 years. She was the resident pianist singer for 21 years. And after she listened to the CD, she said, oh, come to my house. Let's sing. And then she said, oh, let's come to the Pierre. We'll do a night and you can do four or five songs from the CD. And so that's how I got involved with her and started to get back into live performing, because I had stayed away from it for you know, a number of reasons. And I owe it to her for getting me back to performing and singing.
Right. And in the timeline, when is this also right around after this time is when Cabaret Scenes magazine started happening for you, right?
It's yes, because Daryl Henline, who was the founder, publisher, and editor of Cabaret Scenes, contacted me in 2002 Mm-hmm. His assistant was moving and he needed an assistant. And when I asked him after I'd worked there for a couple of months as assistant, why he thought of contacting me, and he couldn't remember. and so I met with him, and he hired me, and I schlepped out every day to Guttenberg, New Jersey, to his apartment where the magazine was housed, and I started working for him on the magazine. I had been a subscriber since it began, and the CD had been out for a few months. And it really, I also owe him thanks, because I started to get known in the cabaret circles because of my involvement in the magazine.
Uh-huh.
You know, because some people knew me, but over the years I would do shows, but there would be big gaps where I wouldn't perform because it just wasn't possible at the time. And so I wasn't as involved with the cabaret community as other ones were, and working on the magazine is what helped. And I got to know a lot of people, and actually that's how Kathleen came to me to do a brochure for her, was through somebody I met in cabaret who knew her. I had done postcards for his shows, and he said, "Oh, you should contact Frank Dane," and she did, and that's how our relationships started. And I really do owe it to Daryl and his hiring me at Cabaret Scenes. And it was fascinating to learn the many personalities and just the ins and outs of the whole cabaret scene,
right?
And what was really involved, because I knew of certain names. I knew, you know, Andrea Markovici, Katie Sullivan, Jeff Harner, Sidney Meyer. Mm-hmm. I knew the clubs, Don't Tell Mama, at that time, Danny's, Skylight Room, The Duplex. But I just wasn't involved, and this got me involved.
Right. And people, right. And for listeners who don't realize, the cabaret scene, which is the name of the magazine, yeah, is a big kind of community in New York. You know, there's a lot of players. There's, as you said, back in the day, there were a lot of different clubs. There still are a variety of different venues in New York. And there's a lot of veteran performers. There's a lot of up and coming performers. There's the Mac Awards every year. It's like this whole community. There's a lot of politics involved. There's a lot of egos and personalities with everything. It's almost like I don't even want to call it a subculture of the Broadway community. It's sort of like a parallel community, because it's not the same people. Sometimes there's a little bit of overlap.
There's a little mix, yes.
Because there are some performers who do some Broadway shows who also do some cabaret work. But it is its own separate community of cabaret performers. And some of them have ongoing gigs where they are the pianist singer at hotels or clubs that are, you know, they're the resident singer, and others who travel around the country and do gigs all over the country. But they're, and so I would imagine working at Cabaret Scenes, because ultimately, and you haven't gotten to that part yet, but you became editor in chief of the magazine,
right?
And still are.
Correct? Yes, it's
20 plus years later.
September will be 22 years. Yeah.
Right.
After a year, Daryl hadn't been feeling well. And after a year, about the time of my first anniversary, he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Uh-huh. And that was about February or March. And he passed away in September of 2003.
Uh-huh.
So his life partner, Keith Maritz, who's a doctor by profession, took over as publisher, and I became editor by default.
Uh-huh.
And I absorbed some of the things that Daryl did during my tenure as his assistant, but he was a very private person, and through his life had people take advantage of him. So he was very cautious about how much information he gave out. And he actually said to Keith about 2 weeks before he died, I wish I had told Frank more.
Uh-huh.
So it was another learning curve for me. Thankfully, Keith had been around for a long time, and there had been friends of theirs who would come in and help do other things, help with mailings and
right.
those kind of things. So I had a good support system, but it still was starting from ground zero. It's interesting. In my life, there have been many times that a question has been asked that's come out of nowhere, and it's led to something new. Like Marianne asking me what I wanted to do with my singing, uh-huh. led to me doing cabaret. Daryl asking me, do you need a job, led to me working for cabaret scenes. You know, that kind of thing has happened quite often, even leading up to this new CD. But so I've been with the magazine since 2002, editor since 2003. And eventually, Keith wanted to back away, and Peter Levy, who was one of our writers and one of the big financial supporters for the magazine, took over as the publisher,
uh-huh.
beyond an editor. But that meant a move from Gutenberg to a home office for the magazine. I love the commute, I have to
right.
say. As I'm sure you do for
oh yes
what you do.
Yes,
it has its plus and minuses,
right?
There's that thing when you think you're done for the day, you think, oh, let me just do this one more thing, and
right.
then an hour and a half later,
right? Of course, it's hard to break away from the office when you
it is.
The office is just like a when few steps visit. Away. Yes.
Exactly. It saves on the wear and tear of clothes and the commute.
Right. But it's a tax write-off. It's also a tax write-off, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. so that's how I got involved with Cabaret Scenes, and which led me to meeting people like Lenny Watts, who started out as a bartender in the clubs while he was performing, and then is a well-known award-winning director, and we've worked together. He was my director on a Johnny Mathis tribute show we did a number of years ago, but he got me involved with MAC, Manhattan Association of Cabarets, and I was on that board for 8 years, so that expanded the people I knew. And then when he started the contest, Mama's Next Big Act, he asked me to be one of the permanent judges, which I've been for the last 7 editions of the contest, and is coming back this summer. So I'll be in that position again. And going back to the storytelling, that's my major advice to the contestants is tell me a story.
Right. Exactly.
Tell me a story. So that Cabaret Scenes led to getting more design clients, which has helped, led to being better known in the cabaret world, and led to the opportunity of being on the MAC board and being in this contest, and just developing some great friendships. There's a nice little group of us who do non-cabaret things together, which is refreshing.
Yeah.
And just knowing all the other players,
mm-hmm.
the good, bad, and the ugly.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Again, it's like everything. But also what it taught me is to understand that cabaret, as important as it is, and as part of the entertainment world, an important part of the entertainment world as it is, to keep it in perspective as well. Because it is this great little piece of the entertainment world, but as with everything, I think perspective is important,
right?
And understand where that sits in the big picture of everything,
right? And it seems to go through cycles. I mean, I don't live in New York, and I can tell you, the LA cabaret scene is kind of in a down in a bit of a slump these days, unfortunately. Yeah. It's constantly, I'm constantly hearing about when is LA Cabaret going to come back, and you know, there's a constant emergence of a new club, but then it will not last very long. And you know, we have our long-standing clubs that seem to do well. We have some venues that last for quite a long time and are still going strong, but any new club it's a risky. But New York seems to be going well these days. It seems to be healthy, which is good.
Yeah, we're doing okay. There are, you know, the big fancy clubs like the Oak Room at the Algonquin and Feinstein's at the Regency are gone, and that was especially in the case of Feinstein's at the Regency, it just became a financial nightmare. Uh-huh. I spoke with Michael Feinstein, and he said, "You know, we're using a dining room and." Which is used during the day for corporate meetings. And then we have to bring in a stage and a piano every night to set up for the cabaret shows. And that's a huge expense.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, people don't go out like they used to. Back when I started, and I wasn't one of those who would do this, but there would be shows at 7, 9, 11, 1 in the morning. And those late night shows or a midnight show would be packed with people.
Right.
You know, it's to get somebody to an 8:30 or 9:30 show sometimes, depending on who the performer is, it is difficult, and it's financially for the venues themselves. It's real estate's expensive in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to pass that cost on to the customers, and I understand it, but I think sometimes cabaret is getting a little more expensive than it should be.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you have to generate an audience. You have to generate a following. I think that Cafe Carlisle is probably the only destination club in the city. The Algonquin, anything that was associated with a hotel, like Feinstein's at the Regency and the Oak Room at the Algonquin, they had somewhat of a built-in audience who would go to the room because they were staying at the hotel.
Right.
Or people would go to the Oak Room or Feinstein's or to Cafe Carlisle because of the name of the club.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there used to be more clubs like that, but without Don't Tell Mama and Chelsea Table and Stage, and now the soon to be reopened Beachman, Laurie Beachman Theater,
right,
and the Green Room 42, to name the major players, and Birdland.
Uh-huh.
Birdland with its two spaces upstairs and downstairs. These clubs have full schedules all the time.
Right.
So the I know what you're saying about LA, because it there have been clubs that have opened and lasted for a few years and then they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for the Gardenias, one of the few that...
And Catalina also.
And Catalina, those are the two.
And Vibrato also does really well. But Vibrato has kind of a very select lineup and a very select audience. But they're still, you know, they have a full schedule, but that's because they have an owner who pulls people in. Because he's got friends in the industry, so he can always push his wife out there. You know,
that's right. You can get out there.
I know Lainey gets it. Lainey says, "Hey, Lainey, I got an empty spot. Get out there."
That's right. But they're doing well. And the other thing is, and this is part of what I've seen being a judge in this contest, is people are always saying we need to have younger people. Well, younger people are joining, and some of them are honoring the American Songbook. Some of them are bringing in what we at the American Songbook Association like to call the new American Songbook, you know, contemporary writers with material. You know, Billy Joel material can work great in a cabaret room. You know, Lauren Caro's stuff works great in a cabaret room.
Right.
And these people are looking at this material and putting their spin on it. Yeah. And I've seen over the years of being in this contest, the final three or five, depending on the year, have run the gamut in age and in style and in material. And to me, that tells me that as often as people say cabaret is a dying art, it's not. It limps along as any art form can do for a while,
right.
But it gets reinvented and reinvigorated. And it's also one of the few art forms where you can become a newcomer at 65. There's there's no age limit to it.
Right.
So the fact that I'm at my age and doing a new CD doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, and it's one of the few non-ageist.
Yep. So just ask Marilyn May.
Exactly. She's going back. She's back at 54 for her 97th birthday for 2 weeks, starting next week.
She's a miracle. I swear to God, she's a miracle.
It is a miracle.
She's amazing.
If she were ever to stop, she's sort of like, you know, a shark.
She has to keep going. She has to keep moving forward. So
I spoke to her during COVID and she said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm singing my driveway. I can't not perform.
I didn't know what time it was. Then I met you. Oh, what a lovely time it was. How sublime it was too. I didn't know what day it was. You held my hand. Warm like the month of May it was. And I'll say it was grand, grand to be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, feel your touch, hear your voice say, I'm all your own. I didn't know what year it was, life was no prize. I wanted love. And here it was, shining out of your eyes. I'm wise, and I know what time it is now. To be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, feel your touch, hear your voice say, I'm all your own. I didn't know what year it was. Life was no prize. I wanted love, and here it was, shining out of your eyes. I'm wise. And I know what time it is. Wise, and I know what time it is. Wise, and I know what time it is. Now.
Anyway, speaking of your CD, your new one, your new album called I've Had a Love, let's talk about that now. I know it's dedicated to your husband, your late husband, Bill. So talk about that. Let's talk about the whole process of getting back into the studio and Bill and the impact that has had on you and the album and why it's dedicated to him and what you wanted the album to convey about what's going on with you as a person, because it's been 24 years since you released an album, and it's kind of you're not the same singer, you're not the same man. You're matured vocally. You've matured as a person. You've seen a lot of stuff. You've been through a lot of things, mm-hmm. And so it's different. And so what is the message you're putting out with the album?
Well, the you know, it has been 24 years, and it was, again, many considerations for not doing it. But it was about, I don't remember the timeline, but Kurt Peterson, who's been my voice teacher for a number of years, and who also is a very, very good friend, one of my best friends here. I think I must have been getting ready to get in shape to sing at Bill's memorial. He passed away from COVID in February of 2021. And because of COVID, I waited to do a memorial service. And so we did it in October of that year, a few days before what would have been his birthday. And I went back and forth saying, should I sing? Should I not? I had invited friends of his to speak and cabaret performers that he was particularly fond of to perform, starting with Marilyn May. And I thought, what the hell? I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to do it.
Right. You're going to try to do it. Yes.
Again, remember, I'm Italian, and there's a lot of emotion that pops to the surface quite often. And I can't control it. So I went to Kurt. It must have been the summer before that to say, well, I haven't sung in a while. Let's see if anything's there. And we always sit and chat before we start a lesson. And he said, what do you want to do creatively? And again, it was one of those things. Somebody asked a question and I went on a path I didn't expect to go on. And as with my voice teacher who asked about what I wanted to do with my singing, without hesitation, I said, I don't want to do another cabaret show. I want to go into the recording studio. I said, I have a life insurance policy from Bill, and I don't want to just stick it somewhere. Uh-huh. I said, I want to do something with it. So this is what I want to do. Uh-huh. So we contacted Kathleen. She was on board, and then we started to look at material. Kathleen and I had done a tribute show to Johnny Mathis in 2012. He's my favorite male singer. And there were songs from there I wanted to record, A Certain Smile, The 12th of Never, and I'll Be Easy to Find. Bart Howard song that isn't well known, but Johnny had done it on his Heavenly album, and I was always attracted to it.
I'll be easy to find when love comes looking for me. I'll stand there with my arms out so that I'll be easy to see. No hide and seek, no guessing games will I play. When love comes in to speak my name, I'll say, right this way. The stars may fall from above, the moon may fade out of sight, but angels will be smiling, and my love will light up the night. Though fools may hide their feelings and tell us love is blind, as for me, I'll be easy. guessing games will I play? When love comes in to speak my name, I'll say, right this way. The stars may fall from above, the moon may fade out of sight, but angels will be smiling, and my love will light up the night. Though fools may hide their feelings and tell us love is blind, as for me, I'll be easy to find.
So that gave us three things to start with. And then there were Unusual Way was a song I had worked with my voice teacher, Marianne, years ago. It had been on my list of songs to do, but there never was the right place to put it. Uh-huh. And I felt this was really the time to do it. And so we just started looking at material. We worked on a lot of stuff. Not all of it made it. We had 17 songs that we finalized. One of them just wasn't working with the rest of them, mainly because I wasn't happy with my vocal on it. So we said 16 is a pretty healthy,
yeah,
healthy CD. That doesn't happen often. The last one with two medleys was 13 songs, but really 11 tracks. And so we just started to work on it. Kathleen and I would work on arrangements. My big thing was, let's make this something special and not very pedestrian arrangement. Let's just twist these around, still honoring the songwriters, because I always believe in honoring the songwriter, the work that they put in, the craft that they put into forming the song. But, you know, let's find an arrangement that makes it our own.
Uh-huh.
And she was on board with that. Kurt was on board with that. Lazy Afternoon was another one I'd always wanted to do, introduced by the Streisand album, the same name. And we both had an idea of how to use the lyric to set it in a specific space and add those sounds to it.
It's a lazy afternoon, and the beetle bugs are zooming, and the tulip trees are blooming, and there's not another human in view but us two. It's a lazy afternoon, and the farmer leaves his reaping in the meadow, cows are sleeping, and the speckled trout stop leaping upstream, as we dream. A fat pink cloud hangs over the hill, unfolding like a rose. If you hold my hand and sit real still, you can hear the grass as it grows. It's a hazy afternoon, and I know a place that's quiet, except for daisies running riot, and there's no one passing by it to see. Come spend this lazy afternoon with me.
So it wasn't until we had honed it down to the songs we wanted to record, and then Kurt and I worked on them vocally and trying to find, well, maybe that key isn't right. And unfortunately for Kathleen, my keys are always in a weird place. She'd say, five sharps? Oh. I wasn't trained as a musician, so that's all Greek to me, but well, I can do it. I don't know if the other instrumentalists will be happy with playing five sharps, but whatever. It's always in a weird key for me. It's always, she'll always say, oh, this is where it should be. And I'll say, I think it needs to go down a half step. And she said, of course you do. That puts it in a place where nobody would ever play it, but it has to work for the voice, right?
Right, exactly.
That's what it's about. So all during the process of working on the material, especially with Kurt, we kept saying, well, you know, this is all about Bill, don't you? And I had put that out of my head because I the emotions would take over too much and I couldn't do the work.
Right.
But it's true.
Right.
It's true. And when we looked at the songs and decided on how we wanted to program the CD, knowing full well that many people these days don't listen from first to last straight through.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there because my listeners get sick and tired of hearing me say this, but I tell my listeners all the time, in this day and age, when people sample albums, when they go onto Spotify and they look through and they say, oh, I'm going to listen to this, I always tell my listeners, I preach this. Every time I have someone like you on, I say to them, if you're going to sit down and listen to an album, whether it's a vocalist recording or it's a cast recording, it is your job to carve out, you can look at the bottom of the listing and it shows you exactly how many songs and what the entire duration time is. And your job is to sit and listen to it from beginning to end in one sitting, because the person, like Frank, is taking you on a journey. And they have spent time sequencing this album and putting it in a certain order. And you should spend the time to sit down and listen to it from beginning to end in one sitting, because that is what the experience is all about. So my listeners do listen to albums from beginning to end all in one sitting. So they do not. Because that's a big part. It's important. That's part of what these albums are about. It's not, I mean, cast recordings, it's important because you need to follow the show if you're not familiar with the show.
It's telling a story.
Right, it's telling a story. And granted, I will be inserting songs from your albums here that are not necessarily in sequential order.
You're not playing the whole
thing. I'm not playing the whole album, right, exactly. But
this conversation's over.
Right, exactly. But I am a little bit of a hypocrite there, but that's because I want them to get a flavor of what you sound like and what the songs are like. But when they go to listen to the album, and I also encourage them to purchase the download, don't just stream, because that's how you make money. Yeah. But, you know, work goes into putting these albums together, and part of the work is sequencing and putting it in the play in order. And it's part of the journey you're going on with the vocalist.
It's absolutely true. And that's what we worked with. We spent a lot of time sequencing. Mm-hmm. As I said, I knew what the last song would be. I knew Some Other Time was going to be the end. Mm-hmm. It's the only place I felt that what that song says, it was the only place that it could go.
Right.
Because of its story.
Right.
It took time. It took time for the other one. And Kathleen kept saying what anti-sequencing in order listening. She kept saying, nobody does this anymore. And Kurt, who comes from theater, for some of your listeners, Kurt Peterson was the young Ben in the original Follies, and he was in Dear World with Angela Lansbury. His background is theater. He's an actor, singer, and to both of us, the story is what is important. And we realized once we had the 16 songs, there is a story here, and we have to make sure that we tell that from beginning to end. Because it makes the work we did in the studio and in selecting the songs and in the storytelling of how the songs were recorded and my interpretation, it's important, because we wanted to make sure to honor Bill, to honor this music, and to honor what has happened to me in the last 24 years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. To have this be in that place. And you're right. I for the show that's coming up, we've been listening to some cuts from the first album. And I even had a friend of mine say, your interp and all of that is exactly the same, but boy, it's a different approach and a different voice. And, you know, 24 years.
Well, of course.
One now, you know, it makes a difference. But also, I've lost both parents, losing Bill, being in a relationship for 33 years. That was, you know, like all relationships, minor ups and downs for us. Mm-hmm. But we made each other laugh, mm-hmm. and which I always tell anybody getting involved with somebody, if they can't make you laugh,
right,
get out.
Right.
And it's just. Even without recognizing that, it's in your body. Uh-huh. It's in your emotional life. It's just going to come out if you're open, and if you're telling the story of the song, all that stuff, all life experience. So I certainly don't regret anything over the last 24 years. I sometimes wonder if Bill had been here, if this would have ever happened. Mm-hmm. You know, if I had my druthers, I'd rather not have the CD. But
right, but things happen for a reason.
They happen, and you have to use them.
Things lead to other things, and this is leading to you getting back into the recording studio,
right?
And it's leading to you putting this album together, and it's leading to listeners getting to experience and share your story with listeners, and ultimately leading to and the music. Yeah. And it's also ultimately leading to you getting up on stage in May for two dates at Don't Tell Mama to share this.
Right. Right.
You know,
which I had to be convinced to do.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I can imagine that's going to be, you know, an interesting evening.
Well, here's the main thing is, and many people will release a CD and then they'll do a CD concert,
right,
a live performance and do the whole CD. And that's fine. I have nothing against that, but it doesn't work for me because I can't replicate what happened in the studio.
Right.
I mean, financially, put it on a very practical level, to have all those musicians on a cabaret stage,
right,
first of all,
right,
would be very crowded. But but very expensive. And I want the CD to stand on its own.
Right.
It's a recording.
Yeah.
It's not, if it had been recorded live somewhere, that would be different. But this is a recording that I want to stand on its own. We worked so hard on it to make it a good recording and for it to say, oh yeah, here's a record. Uh-huh. This is what this is. Uh-huh. So when Kathleen was the first one and Kurt pushed it as well, you really need to honor what work you've done, what work we've done, because uh-huh. this was a collaboration. My name's on it as the vocalist, but it would not exist without Kathleen and Kurt at all. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And anybody who has a Kathleen and Kurt on their team is really lucky. I would wish that for anybody. Uh-huh. So she said, you need to do this. And I said, well, what? I don't want to do the whole album. First of all, that bores me. And if I'm bored, it's going to bore everybody else. I said, what about if we do selections from the first album? Because aside from that little party that I threw, I never did a live performance. That show that we had worked on never came to be. So I thought, I originally was going to call it Now/Then. This is what I'm doing now. This is what we did then. And we went back and forth with that. And it might have been Kurt. I don't remember. His assistant, Claire Frances Sullivan, who's been a godsend as well as associate producer. Somebody said, you're celebrating the CD. And I went, oh, yes, of course. So let's call it a celebration. And then being the smart aleck I am, get that from my father, I said, and let's put 24 years in the making on. You know, let's put a little humor in there. It's right. My humor, but that doesn't matter. So we, Kathleen and I, have been looking at the original, the first CD, and we're probably going to do four songs from it, and then four or five, and then do six or seven from the new one. We're having Boots Mallison on bass, who is on some of the songs on the CD, and Peter Kahlo on guitar. It's sort of the old Nat Cole trio piano guitar bass. And we'll stick as close as we can to the arrangements, but because it's live, we've got the freedom to put Peter in on guitar and some things that he's not on.
Right.
You know, put the bass in, take the piano out, do those kind of things to make it, first of all, interesting for us. Uh-huh. You know, and then anybody can get either CD and listen to it.
But right.
That's the point of making a record, is you can listen to it whenever you want, and it's there, and it's there forever. But for the live thing, it needs to be interesting for us, and then I think it'll be interesting for the audience. So we're right. doing things like The Way You Look Tonight, Night and Day, I Thought About You, and It Never Was You right now are the ones we're doing from the 2001 CD.
Right.
We're still kind of going back and forth about the stuff from the new CD, but it definitely will be some other time, which will close the show as it does the CD. And Hello, Young Lovers, we know for sure those two. So it's I'm glad they convinced me. It's a little scary because it's been a while since I've done an hour's worth of singing all at once.
Yes.
That's the good thing about recording is you can take lots of breaks and order a pizza and do a number of takes as well until you get the one that you like.
Right, exactly.
So this is a way to honor the CD, to honor Bill's memory. It's also a thank you to Kathleen and Kurt for their support and their generosity throughout this entire process. And I also have to say, since I started working with Kathleen, she's been extremely generous with her time. Uh-huh. And it's the one reason I've been able to do the work that I have been doing, because she is just like that. She is open to giving people opportunities and to using her time to do that and her talent. And Kurt has been a blessing through the whole Bill thing and through this whole process. And these are two important people in my life. And one thing, and I think it's in the, it is in Kurt's note in the CD. I will tend sometimes to just want to sing and forget the story. You know, I'm a hypocrite that way. But we would do a take and he would say, "Lovely, Frank, that was lovely. Stop singing. A little less singing."
Right.
I got stuck in my head. I got too busy listening to myself. He said, "Yeah, we have to listen. You don't listen to yourself, you know." Mm-hmm. A little less singing. So it's pretty funny when your voice teacher tells you not to sing so much. But he's right. He's right, because the moment that happens, then the story goes right out the window.
Right. And
the reason for selecting these songs is gone. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, the dates, just so the listeners know, the dates for your Don't Tell Mama appearances are May 7th and May 29th at 7 p.m. on both evenings. And I will include a link here on the radio show page so people can get to your website for all the info, and also to purchase both albums, because both albums are available on there. So what, after this is done, what does the future hold for Frank? I mean, are you... I mean, obviously, you're going to continue with Cabaret Scenes magazine, but any other plans?
Anybody out there want to learn to be an editor?
Right, exactly. It's like, I have to retire. Yeah, I was going to say, you've got to retire at some point.
What else would I do right now?
I know. I mean, what do you foresee for yourself? I mean, you've done so much in terms of the whole New York cabaret world. What do you aspire to?
Well, I do want to get back into the recording studio.
Oh, you too? Okay.
I do. At first, I'm still thinking of this, I would like to do a Christmas album. Only because I have a great picture of me at 5 sitting on Santa's lap.
And I think, there you go.
Great cover. You know, sometimes you need inspiration, right?
Right.
Sometimes it's a picture, sometimes it's something. But I want it to be not your typical Christmas album, because you hear a lot of those songs by better singers than me and other other people. I want to mix it up with material that has the message of the holiday,
right?
That it has the flavor of the holiday without it being a Christmas carol.
Right.
There would certainly be some, you know, the Christmas song I certainly would want to do, and the original lyrics to "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas," which appeals to my more dark Italian mood.
Yes, yes.
But I think, especially now, they are relevant lyrics. Look at some other things that there's a Jason Robert Brown song called "Hope" that I think really captures the essence of what the holiday and the season is all about. And so we're starting to do that work, but I also would like to do another standards CD. So I have to keep working.
Yes.
I'd say I wasn't as unfortunate with the financial means to do this CD because of a life insurance policy, but I think it was the best use of those resources.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I'm happy that I got back in there, because even I hear a difference between 2001 and this year, and it is life and age and experience, and I think also understanding my voice more and the work that Kurt and I have done over the years. So I'm really fortunate. Again, it might be my name on this, but this is a group effort. It is our CD. It's not my CD. It belongs to us because of really the love that they showed.
Well, it's a terrific album called "I've Had a Love" from Frank Dane, and you can all see Frank at Don't Tell Mama coming up in May 7th and May 29th. I'll have a link to Frank's website, which is a wonderful website. You're one of those people. It's not only is it very well laid out, but it's obviously very well curated and kept up to date, as opposed to a lot of performers' websites I go on. I'm like, good Lord, when was the last time you looked and fixed this website?
It's true.
It's so out of date, and yours is like up to date with new photos, and you keep it up to date and going. And some people don't take care of their websites very well.
Yeah, I got a good team who design that for me and listen to my ideas and then made them much better.
And people can purchase both albums right there on the website, which is always nice. And so please do. And so Frank, it's been delightful to chat with you.
Donald, thank you so much. I really appreciate you giving me the chance to promote our CD and to talk about how I got from 2001 to 2025.
Yeah. Wow. It's been well, I know. Well,
I should have put "I'm Still Here" somewhere in there.
I know, exactly. Maybe you should sing that. Maybe you should plan on adding that to your show, or at least adding that to the next album.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much, Frank.
Thank you. This has been a pleasure. I really appreciate your support.
Has the time all gone to? Haven't done half the things we want to. Oh well, we'll catch up some other time. This day was just a token. Too many words are still unspoken. Oh well, we'll catch up some other time. Just when the fun is starting, comes the time for parting. But let's be glad for what we've had and what's to come. There's so much more embracing still to be done, but time is racing. Oh well, we'll catch up some other time. We'll catch up some other time.